Sir Charles Barkley is going to be on our show Tuesday to give us his Super Bowl picks, but Solomon, I thought that this would be an important subject for you and I to talk about, which is, we talked about with Greg Gumbel yesterday, which is, how much better did an African-American coach have to be in the early days? Here's Greg Gumbel.
The others, too, and, you know, especially in the early stages, it's kind of like when Jackie Robinson first broke into baseball. You know, I think that Branch Rickey and several other people who were pushing behind that actually happening knew that the first one had better be really good. You know, you better know what he's doing.
He had to be good.
And absolutely, it has to put a good face on it, or else he's going to take the plunge for everybody else. You know, there are going to be some bad African-American coaches. I'm sure there are around the country. There are some that have been denied jobs, probably for that very reason.
That's Greg Gumbel. What does this mean to you, Solomon, as you have looked at the different personalities, effectiveness, the interaction of black and white coaches with the different players around the league? Who seems to have that serenity, that control, that leadership?
Well, you know, I think, you know, all the points you mentioned are very on point, you know, and then what we've seen from Tony Dungy and obviously Lovie Smith are the characteristics and the traits that you want in a coach, because I think they go beyond teaching the X's and O's. I think they're very adept at teaching young men how to be better people. And by way of becoming better people, they're going to make for better employees. They're going to be happier at work. They're going to love coming to work and practicing and doing all the things that it takes during the long grind of an NFL season. So they're going to be more productive. And I think that's where these two guys are very similar in their ability to strike a chord with their players and have the guys go out and lay it on the line for them. Now, that have anything to do with being African-American, has something to do with just being quality people. Bill Cowher had the same trait. Don Shula had the same trait. So did a guy like Tom Landry. All the great coaches shared this, but I think we have to understand that African-American coaches, in that sense, if you're a good coach, you share some of the same traits, and there's no doubt in my mind that Lovie Smith and Tony Dungy bring those kind of abilities to the table.
What is especially unique about them? Because they really, true, seem to have the complete respect of their entire organization. When you look around and you look even with Bill Parcells, what he had to deal with T.O., how rare a commodity that is.
Well, I think, you know, it's becoming more of a situation where you have to have those abilities. I think there was a point in time where you could just coach football and wouldn't have to deal with some of the things that players brought to the table in terms of their personal life. The player had to totally conform to the environment of a professional football organization or he wasn't going to be around. Now you find the organizations conforming to the individual and to the player. And I'm not so sure that that's how it should be.
Let's talk about another African-American coach who I have tremendous respect for, one of the great defensive minds in the history of the NFL with the Baltimore Ravens, their Super Bowl genius, if you will, Marvin Lewis, and what he's dealing with in Cincinnati with a guy that, for all appearances, has control over his team. But nine different players have been arrested, have been in trouble. What is going on there? Are you there, Solomon? I can't hear Solomon right now, so I will wait to see what's going on. I'm going to play something from Michael Strahan from Monday's show about the hype of this Super Bowl, how difficult it is, whether you're Marvin Lewis, if you get there, or whether you're, in this case, Lovie Smith and Tony Dungy, to keep your players focused.
Sometimes players buy into the hype of what they're saying about one side or the other, and it does not help your confidence in that game. So I think whichever team can distance themselves from all the media fanfare, from getting caught up in the process of it, and who can just understand it, keep your head clear of the papers, stay clear of all this extra stuff that's now going to be thrown your way, and focus on what's at hand, that's going to be the team that handles the best and wins. And I think that's going to be a reflection, too, in a lot of ways of the coaching.
So when we look at the challenge of this, it's not just about X's and O's. When you get to the two-week break, I think it really hurts the caliber of the game. Now, you could say that that's what the Super Bowl needs, but I think that's a problem. that the quality of the game should be put ahead, and I'm not really sure if it really makes that much of a difference to have an extra week for everybody to make arrangements to come down. I wish that the Super Bowl was 1 week later, because if you did an analysis of those Super Bowls that were played 1 week later, usually they were a lot better caliber. We're going to talk in a few minutes with Dr. Andrew Jacobs and Fred Eng for the National Alliance for Youth Sports about this phenomenon of coaches that have to deal with players that get in trouble, the team-building ethic, and what is necessary. And we're waiting to get Solomon back on the line. But in the meantime, welcome back to Head Games Radio. Sorry for those technical difficulties, but you know, we're all about figuring out a way, just like in the Super Bowl, to make it happen. When your, let's say your running back fumbles the ball and the ball comes into the end zone, and suddenly an offensive lineman falls on it, and you've got to, you know, deal with that the way the Colts did. They hung in there when Asante Samuel intercepted that ball and returned it for a touchdown. They're down 21-3. They hung in there. They got that field goal at the end of the game. So we're talking about the subject, Dr. Jacobs, since we want to connect to youth sports themes in the second half of the show, about those coaches, those leaders, like a Tony Dungy and a Lovie Smith, that can keep their composure and make the connection also for the players that, unfortunately, for instance, in the case of the Cincinnati Bengals, can't keep their composure off the field. What do you think is happening with the Cincinnati Bengals?
Well, Nick, I think that there are a couple things going on. Number one, the league has substance abuse programs in place to deal with players who are having issues. Obviously, with the Bengals, there are some issues with a lot of these players in terms of, I think, respect of authority, entitlement. I think a lot of these players just seem to think they can get away with whatever they want to get away with, and I think you really have to look at the administration of that team in terms of what's going on, because they're drafting players that are they're having a number of problems, and I think you've got to look at the whole picture and start to figure out exactly what's happening here. You don't have this with a lot of other teams. I think Jonathan Joseph, I believe, was the ninth player in the last year that's been arrested for some kind of legal issue. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So I think when you really need to look at this, you need to look at, you know, who are they drafting, what type of players are they drafting, what type of do they have, and what are they doing about dealing with these players when they've got these issues. Obviously, when you've got nine players on a team of about 50-something on a roster, you've got some serious problems with the type of person that you're drafting and putting on your team.
But if you're Marvin Lewis and, you know, you have such respect around the league, at times now I think that people can make the legitimate criticism that level of respect is going to begin to be mediated. It's going to begin to be damaged, because despite him laying down the law publicly, these guys are still getting in trouble. Is there any component that you see that creates the sense that players will get in trouble? Is it something about Cincinnati? Is it something about the fact that players think they're above the law? What is the thing that would make players think, whether they're Tank Johnson or whether they're on the Cincinnati Bengals or wherever they are? We saw a player get shot in San Diego. It's been around. It's Michael Vick last week, although it appears it wasn't as bad as we thought at first. What is the problem?
Well, I think the problem, Nick, is that you've got a bunch of young, mostly young athletes who think they can get away with things, and authority is not something they have a lot of respect for. And I think that's the issue, because you're seeing it all over. You know, the Bengals just happen to have a lot of these guys on their team, and you have to look at that big perspective. But I think you've got a number of players in this league who don't think the rules apply to them. And they're getting caught, and they're getting punished, but nonetheless, they think they can get away with it.
Well, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we'll have Fred Eng for the National Alliance for Youth Sports join us, and we'll bring in Luke Jensen for an update on the Aussie Open Down Under. Stay with us on Head Games on Sports Byline and Sirius Satellite Channel 122.